Project Nerd fans, to another episode of I'm Not Famous. I'm Iggy. I'm not famous. I'm with Carrie, who's also not famous.
Still.
But we're here with Lonnie Valdez, the fans addiction, local wrestling sensation, star, talent. Anyways, it's with, what's it called again? I know Jeff photographs at the...
Lucha Libre and Laughs.
Lucha Libre and Laughs, right?
Yeah.
Oh, down at the...
The Oriental.
Oriental Theater. On, I guess, about the west, northwest-ish side of Denver.
44th and Tennyson.
Okay, 40. Yeah. That's even better. So for our Denver listeners, you know exactly where it is. Awesome. But you guys wrestle, I think, what, about once a month on Fridays?
Whenever. Like, our next one isn't until October 26th.
But okay.
Yeah, we usually go around. We try to do, like, once a month, once every other month, that kind of thing.
Awesome. Well, as we have already got rolling, we're going to ask you some questions. We talk about some fun stuff and all that. I know Carrie is eager over there to ask certain questions. You look excited.
As our audience has figured out, I know nothing about any of the topics that we usually pick. So with that, I was a huge wrestling fan when I was a kid. You know, I still remember the good days of Jake the Snake Roberts, and going even back, further than that, you get into certain aspects of it. What initially got you into the sport?
My family, really. My uncle was like a local pro wrestler out here in Denver. Very, very small. Like, nobody kind of, knew about it back then.
Right.
Social media wasn't a thing, obviously.
Now, when you say back, what period of time was that? Was it like in the 50s or?
Like 70s.
70s, mm-hmm. Okay.
And he like...
50s, like how?
Yeah.
It's 2018. Yeah. My great-great-great-great-grandfather. Gotcha.
Four generations. But no, my uncle used to wrestle out here, so I just kind of grew up watching it with him and that kind of thing. And it was just always something that was on in my household and grew up being a fan of it. And I've been I started martial arts when I was like 8 and continue to do it. And when I got out of high school, my mom asked me, she was like, are you going to be a wrestler or a boxer? Like, she didn't ask me. Yeah, she didn't ask me if I was going to go to college or anything like that. She's like, are you wrestling or boxing? And I was like, oh, wrestling, I guess. So she sent me to Florida, and I learned how to wrestle and came back. And
was that what your family kind of did? It seemed like what you're saying, right? Like, was everybody doing that prior to you, or it was just specifically
it was pretty much,
you?
Yeah, just specifically me. She kind of knew exactly what, like, where my head was at. So it was like...
I think that's huge. Like, it's so many times talk about the parenting of, like, you're going to do this, you're going to do this. And instead it was like, we can tell what you're into already. Let's support it.
Yeah.
Push in that direction. That's pretty awesome.
Yeah, no, she was great. So, like, she just kind of saw... kind of the path and direction that I wanted to take, and she was very supportive and sent me to Florida. I became a wrestler, and then turns out I had to go to college anyway.
You say that you become one, right? Uh-huh. So I think there's a lot in between. There's got to be a lot of hard work in between that. You went to Florida.
Mm-hmm.
Did you go to like a wrestling camp or mm-hmm. So you actually were trained and learned all the aspect of what you do during that time period?
Not all of it. Like, you learn the basics. Like, you don't become a wrestler in like just, one training session, whatever. It takes a long time, even after you get done training, whatever.
Yeah.
Like, you got to learn how to do it, how to be in front of a crowd, how to be on the road, how to accept bookings, how to negotiate. Like, all of those things kind of come after you kind of learn what you're doing and how to,
So there's the performance, but you're learning the after performance,
mm-hmm.
how to actually book those performances, how to continue. Was
the
there
business
a school
behind
Florida
it.
That you went to, or was this like a person that you trained from directly?
It was a school, former world heavyweight champion, Dory Funk Jr.
Okay.
You might know his brother, Terry Funk.
So
Dory's the older brother, and their father was the original wrestler.
Okay.
So they're both like second generation guys. And Dory had a school down in Florida, and I called him up. I was 17.
Oh, wow.
I called him up and talked to him, and they were like, yeah, come on down. And I was like, there's a problem. I'm 17. And they were like, well, you got to, get your parents to sign the paperwork and get it notarized, the whole thing.
Yeah.
So we had to do all of that. But I turned 18 in Florida.
Okay.
Like, my very first day in a wrestling ring was my 18th birthday. And so,
what did that feel like? I mean, you're a kid at that point, right? Like, I mean,
it was
you're away
crazy.
From your family.
Yeah, yeah.
You're there by yourself, I assume, at that point, right? Because you're doing it on your own. You're 18 years old, taking this new platform on for like the first time in a professional setting.
Yeah.
How do you deal with that?
I don't know, man. I was just kind of wide open to it, and I was just down there. And Dory's wife, Marty, had a really good kind of relationship with my mom, like talking over the phone. So like, she's a mom too. So my mom was like, cool with it. Like, it was fine. And I was excited. I was anxious to do all of it. You know what I mean? So I wasn't really thinking too much about it, but.
So you're just reacting at that point, just trying to get through the day. Like, but it also seemed like you felt like it was family in a way. Like, they knew your family. So did they kind of take you on as if, you know, you were one of theirs kind of thing?
Yeah, I've always, Dory's just such a cool, relaxed guy. You know what I mean? Like, I never felt nervous and, like, scared or anything like that. I always just kind of was just like, this is a lot. Like, you see your whole life and you're like, I could do that. And then you get in there for the first couple times and you're just like, man, this ring doesn't feel anything like I thought it would. These ropes don't feel anything like I thought I would. How do I even get in the ring? You know what I mean?
So that has a...
Also serves as a metaphor for life right there.
I guess so, right? Yeah, no doubt. No.
But there is an element. So to me, as an outsider, it seems like all that would be the same. But you're saying that the ropes feel different.
Oh.
So everything is different depending on where you're at? Like, different setups, different... You know, textures, that kind of piece to it?
Yeah, every ring actually feels a little bit different, even if they're built the same, because rings are made different ways.
Okay.
So it's like some rings have cable ropes, like they cable and you wrap them in hose and wrap them in tape or whatever.
Right.
And then some of them have actual real ropes, which feel different when you hit them. So it's like every time I'm in a new ring, I always make sure to walk around in it first and like kind of get the vibe of it and kind of, you know, feel it out so I know exactly what I'm capable of. And I do a lot of high flying stuff, like, you know, I'm always backflipping and jumping around and stuff like that. So the ropes are extremely important to me,
right?
Knowing how to stand on them, how to balance them and how to use them to do what I do. So it's a, you know, but yeah, you just, it's a whole new environment. Like I said, you watch it your whole life and you have a preconceived notion of what it's all going to be. And then you get in the ring and you're just like, oh no, this isn't.
Does
anything.
That change your performance at all? Like, depending on whether it's cable or ropes, does that change some of the high flying stunts that you do?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like there's, I mean, if I get enough time to acclimate to a ring, it's fine. I could do whatever. But if I'm in a ring for the first time and the ropes feel a little bit weird or anything like that, I might, instead of springboarding off the center of the ropes, I might, you know, make sure to go to the corners where it's a little bit more balanced. And I can,
right.
You know, I mean, it's different things like that. I might, you know, take to the second rope a little bit more than the top rope. It's just different, and it all depends on the venue as well, like knowing where my audience is, what side of the ring, like where everybody's seated. If are they on all four sides of the ring, or are they just on one or just on two? You know what I mean? Like, you got to know.
So that dictates almost your performance then. Mm-hmm. So you're saying, like, if you have an audience on one side of the ring, you're going to do that high-flying stunt off that side of it to get your audience into it, or is that what you're saying? Like,
yeah,
that piece of it?
Yeah, just knowing where to set everything up and, like, knowing... You know, which story to tell. And
so you're conscious of that as you're in the ring.
I try to
be. You know what your performance, you know, might look like,
mm-hmm.
but it might be dictated differently depending on the audience or how the audience is reacting to your performance.
Yeah, my opponent, all of those different things kind of play into it. So it's all just knowing your environment, knowing what you want to do when you're out there, and then just going out there and doing it. And so, yeah, it changes. Every show changes, you know what I mean? It's just, you know, or you go to like a place like the Oriental, where the normally, you know, in a venue, like, we're all sitting down, we're the audience, you know what I mean? The ring is right over there. The ring's about this high off the ground. And it's like a stage, right?
Right.
So you're in the center, you're just performing whatever, you're doing your thing. But at the Oriental, it's a traditional theater, so they put the ring on the stage.
Oh, wow.
So usually the ring's about here. Well, the stage is about here. So now the ring is like, you know, 8.
So you're higher.
Yeah, so the ring.
So you're on the platform of the stage, like, mm-hmm. overlooking the entire audience, and even on top of that stage with, mm-hmm. with the
Yeah, and the ring adds more to it. So you're 8 to 10 feet off the ground, or off the,
you know. So when you're getting up to the second or third ropes, you're probably, what, 20, 30 feet in the air?
I'm
above the audience at that point?
About, yeah, like 15, 16 feet off the air.
No. That's all I need to know. I'm not doing that.
You
That's why you do it. No, it's amazing.
And I've kind of the guy known to backflip off the ring down into the audience. So, like, you know, 10, 12 feet down on the floor.
Do you know the audience people that are picking you up?
No.
They catch you.
Hopefully my opponent's down there.
Okay, all right.
I land on somebody.
I didn't know that was like part of like a new type of stage diving now.
Yeah,
where you just backflip off of a ring, or if you, like, you know, rehearse that. Or so you're saying your opponent's on the bottom. You're actually landing on the opponent then.
Sometimes.
Hopefully.
When I fought, I wrestled Royce Isaacs, and he had him all set up and everything like that. He's down there backflipped, and you know, he was smart enough to get out of the way, so I hit the concrete and I was walking funny for a couple days.
Oh,
but
I bet.
Yeah, it was a bad situation. I had this giant bruise all the way down my leg where I
was that were you expecting it to happen, or was that something that your opponent did that you didn't necessarily like?
I thought he was in a much better I thought I had the opportunity to land the move, and he smart enough to get out of the way. So
right, because we talk all the time, and I know this is a topic. People always say this is fake.
Mm-hmm.
And you just mentioned where obviously it's not, mm-hmm. you know, because you did an event, you did a move, mm-hmm. and you had an effect from that.
Oh yeah,
you can't fake that, right?
I'm constantly bruised. I'm always injured. If I ever woke up feeling healthy, I'd think something was wrong. Like, it's just, you know, wrestling is a very physical activity.
Right.
And, you know, I've got guys twice my size slamming me down on a very hard, you know, the preconceived notion is that the ring's kind of like a trampoline, right? Or like a bed
spring. Well, it's wood, right? I mean, it's pretty much a sheet of wood.
It's
pretty much it.
Yeah, it's a steel frame.
Yeah.
You know, whatever planks of wood they got. Different rings are built different ways, but yeah, it's always wood, and then like that much of a mat, like a high school wrestling mat, that same kind of mat on top of that, and then just canvas. So when you're hitting it, you're hitting steel and wood and boards and all that other stuff, and you know, on the floor, like concrete floor like this, when I'm getting slammed on that, I'm getting slammed on that. So so it's brutal, and it's you know, you're always in pain, you're always, you know, just kind of, you know, Advil is a wrestler's best friend.
Right.
So, but yeah, no, it's just the way it is. But yeah, you know, wrestling has that stigma attached to it. But no, what you see is what you get when we're throwing each other down. It's it sucks.
It's really happening. Regardless of what people think of it, there's two people or more than that, we'll say, right, for certain matches, that are performing an actual physical feat.
Mm-hmm.
You're physically doing that performance. Whether it goes right or whether it goes wrong, you're still going to have pain after that.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Even if the move goes right, you could still end up in a severe amount of pain.
Oh, yeah. Like I said, I've been a martial artist since I was 8. And, like, out of all the different types of martial arts that I've ever done and stuff like that, wrestling's the one I've gotten injured the most. Wrestling's the one where I'm always sore the most. The training's the hardest. Like, it's, you know, it's very physically challenging and very difficult.
I think a running theme with the I'm Not Famous guests of what we've kind of talked about is the complexity of the performing arts. Like, everybody, you even mentioned, like, oh yeah, I want to go up there and do that. And then you realize how different it is once you get in there.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it's what we're talking about with everything. We talked with a gentleman who's a fire breather. It's the complexity of what's going through his mind at that very moment.
Mm-hmm.
And you're talking about that. You're jumping from ropes. And it's not just a matter of, I'm jumping, I'm going to land on a mat. It's a matter of, I got to make sure this person's right here. He's got to make sure that he's this so we can, you know, not hurt each other. The matter of the height, the different ropes, the everything. I think it's just so big when people are always like, oh, I can do that. I can do that. The Monday morning quarterbacks, backseat drivers and stuff like that. And it's like, once you get out there and do something, it's like, oh, holy crap, this is a completely different what I expected.
Mm-hmm.
Not necessarily in a bad way, but there's a lot more that's going into every moment.
Yeah. And I've trained wrestlers for a long time as well. And, you know, you always see them get in the ring for the first time and you kind of see how they react to everything like that. And they're like touching things and like kind of getting a vibe. And it's just like, not quite what you expected, huh? And then you're usually like, no, but it'll be fine. So
I think that's it. So my biggest thing, I always try to, you know, figure out certain aspects of how you got into it, why you got into it. I'm always fascinated by, you know, your favorite.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, you know, you talk about, you know, your family, you know, you mentioned, I think, your grandfather that you watched growing up. From a professional standpoint, did you have like a favorite professional wrestler when you were growing up that kind of you modeled your your performance to be after?
Yeah, it was my uncle was the wrestler. But
that's a good answer in case anybody his family listens, right?
Yeah. No, I was a big fan of Japanese wrestling. I still am.
Okay.
Pro-desu. So like a lot of a company out there called All Japan Pro Wrestling was very big influence on me. So like the heavyweights in that division, like Misawa, Kawada, a couple other guys, you know, that were just huge, Kenta Kobashi. But like I was a big fan of the junior heavyweight division in New Japan. So like Jushin Thunder Liger, you know, Dean Malenko, Eddie Guerrero, Ultimo Dragon,
I got two names in there.
Yeah. So like those guys were very big on me. Like I'm known to do a lot of moonsaults. That's a big move in my arsenal.
What is a moonsault? So are you at the, we talked about a minute ago, you were saying the second or third ropes. Does it start on the third ropes and you?
I could pretty much do it from anywhere. I could do it standing or, you know what I mean?
So do you like a full?
It's like a full backflip. It's backflip splash. So.
So are you able to eye your landing as you're going over, mm-hmm. or is it just like a?
Yeah.
I don't know, man.
And but that's like the backflip move that I'll do off of the ring and pretty much everywhere and anywhere.
So would you say like, you know, and obviously wrestling, they call it a signature move, right? Is that mm-hmm. one that you see your audience really want you to do?
Yeah.
Because it happens so much and that's kind of a big move that you can do off multiple platforms, mm-hmm. especially like you were saying like 25, 30 feet off a rope into the ground. Like that's an amazing visual, right? Like you can see that. That's crazy.
Yeah, no, it's a very pretty move.
Yeah.
So it's like, it's a, you know.
So is it only like a 180?
Mm-hmm.
Where you start and you land on your belly at that point?
Yeah.
Yeah, is that the, okay.
Yeah, so it's a, like, Ultimo Dragon was like, he invented something called the Acai Moonsault where you go to the outside. So like, the junior, like, my favorites watching were probably the heavyweights of all Japan, but the guys I really modeled myself after were like the New Japan junior heavyweights.
Right.
And then they came over here to the U.S. and I got to watch a lot of them here in WCW and that kind of thing. So like watching them every weekend and stuff like that.
So
was
were you
really
like
fun.
A WCW more than, you know, now WWE, which was previously WWF?
Yeah, no, I was more a WWF guy, but like those guys were the... Those guys were the guys that would change the channel for.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? So the cruiserweight division back then was like my favorite thing in the world because I knew I was not going to be a heavyweight. You know? So I was.
But you are a heavyweight now. You mentioned that when we were talking before this, you're considered a heavyweight in this this organization that you're with right now, right?
I'm still like I'm always going to be a junior. Like I'm always a cruiserweight.
Right.
But no, I've won heavyweight titles. Like you know.
So you move up the weight class then in that case, right? Like you're staying at the same cruiserweight level, but you're going up and wrestling a heavyweight person.
Usually heavyweight title means the main event, right?
Okay,
so
gotcha.
Like, you know, when you're the heavyweight champion, you're ending the show, you're closing it.
Gotcha.
So I've been heavyweight champion, you know, several times for several different companies, including Lucha Libre and Laughs. But it basically just means you're closing the show. You're the main event.
So then the audience actually wants you out there. Like you're mm-hmm. having a large audience coming out and watching you do this.
Mm-hmm.
Is this something that you've cultivated from, you know, previous organizations, or is it, you know, family that, you know, you have a lasting legacy in this environment? Do you get a lot of people that know your family that's coming in, or?
No, like pretty much nobody remembers like my uncle who did it way back in the day, cause it was much smaller at that time. Each promotion is kind of their own thing, right? So, like, Lucha Libre and Laughs has its very own unique audience, which is really fun because the show is half comedians and half wrestling. And the commentators are both comedians who were wrestling fans. You know, the host of the show is a comedian. For a long time, the referee was a comedian. So the whole show is just, like, centered in comedy. And they'll start off with a stand-up comedian, then you do a wrestling match. Then a stand-up comedian and a wrestling match, and it's like a really cool variety show that's kind of really taken off here. And you know, now we've been Westward's Comedy Night of the Year for the last 4 years in a row.
And how long have you been with this organization?
3 years, 3.5 years.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I'm the longest reigning champion. I was the champion for almost a full year, which was kind of cool. Like I just that promotion has done a really good job of getting its own audience and knowing, and our audience knows exactly what they're coming to see.
Right.
You know what I mean? And it's it's nice. It goes out there. They react.
Do you like that
right
performance
way.
Aspect? You know, I don't mean to interrupt, but like, you know, I'm sure as you're coming up in the sport, you're seeing it's all wrestling.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you go to a wrestling, you know, performance, and mm-hmm. it's nothing but variations of the style. Now you're seeing the aspect of somebody could be there to witness a comedian,
mm-hmm.
but stay for your performance, right? Your match.
Yeah.
Do you like that balance of the two? Like you're getting now, it seems like new, you know, followers, you know, new fans because they came to a comedy show and you happen to put on this high flying stunt and now they're immediately drawn in mm-hmm. to this amazing performance.
Yeah. It's really cool. Cause like you get to expose somebody who would normally see you to something that they now like, you know right. what I mean? And we got a ton of repeat people who keep coming back over and over again. And when I run into a fan on the street or something like that, and they're just like, Lucha Libre and Laughs, that was awesome. I remember you did the thing. And it's obviously a person who wasn't a wrestling fan before right. that night. And it's a really cool thing to like perform for brand new people because mm-hmm. they've never seen anything like that before. Wasn't expecting to see something like that. And they come, they're impressed, they you know like it, and hopefully they come back the next time. But yeah, Lucha Libre and Laughs is a great promotion. It's interesting how it started off too, because the promoter used to be he was a trained as wrestler. I think he did several matches, but he was also a stand-up comedian for a long time, and he thought of combining the two. When I first originally heard the concept, I was very skeptical. So I didn't book with them for a year, and like their first year, I didn't, you know, I just wanted to see if it was going to last and what it was going to do. And then after a while, I saw it was a good show, and I heard good things about the promoter, so I reached out to him and been wrestling for him ever since. And the company just keeps growing and getting bigger, and you know, we're doing sellout shows and stuff like that. And it's a really interesting experience just because of how unique it is, and I really like it. It's you know, one of my favorite shows that I've ever performed on. So. Very proud of it.
Well, I think our producer pointed out that you wrestle for other shows as well.
Yeah.
How do you train for multiple, like if this is almost a monthly basis, like how do you train for multiple
shows? Yeah, and it could be
shows, I guess.
Yeah, it depends on like how many shows are coming down the pike. Mm-hmm. Like I can be wrestling every weekend, twice a weekend, you know, whenever it is, just whenever people are willing to put me on the shows is when I'm like going out there.
You get up
doing
there twice
it.
A weekend?
Yeah. I've done that for a long time.
You're talking
time.
About like you worry about the one flip. Imagine falling on the concrete twice in one weekend.
Yeah, that's wrestler's life, man. You just you perform on whatever shows you could get on. Like right now I've been taking it a little bit easier and kind of lightening up my schedule, so I'm only really wrestling for one, but there's, you know, Primos Pro Wrestling here in Colorado that I've been champion for them a couple different times, and you know, they're, you know, good people over there, so I've wrestled for them a lot. You know, different companies out here, there's a lot of different things that come, you know, come around, so you just kind of, you know, I'm in a position where I'm known well enough where if I want to wrestle on certain shows, I could reach out and I'll probably get on those shows. And promoters are cool with me taking time off so I can deal with other things and, you know, handle real life for a little while. You know what I mean? So, but yeah, no, man, shows out here are really fun. They're just, you know, trying to get them discovered and shine a spotlight on them so that people can discover them for themselves is like a big deal for us. And like, and it's always nice to see companies growing and expanding and getting bigger and better audiences, you know?
So you say the fans addiction, that's your nickname. Where does that come from?
I don't remember. It could have been a friend of mine named August Kai. He's given me nicknames before. So
nicknames you probably don't want to share.
Yeah, pretty much. I think he called me, I actually don't remember where that came from.
Okay.
But I liked it, so I just kept using it and everything like that. But yeah, it had to be one of the commentators out here. Couldn't tell you exactly who. I know August he's called me several different things in the past because he was an announcer for a company I actually owned, and he came up with a bunch of different stuff. Before that, I was my friend Trajan, who's another wrestler out here, called me the tactical assault weapon. So I was that for a little while, but it just didn't feel weird. It just didn't feel right. So
that's it. The fans addiction sounds like a wrestling name. Yeah. Tactical assault weapon.
Yeah. I was just like, whatever. I just needed a handle. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Kerry, what's your wrestling name?
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. Put on the spot.
Yeah.
I
you gotta
no
come
idea.
Up with a wrestling name.
No, see, I'm
come on,
Kerry.
Let's do this, man.
See,
Los Rockies.
Los Rockies.
Los Rockies. No, I definitely, there's a lot of short references that I would. I would say with a red beard, probably some leprechaun.
The leprechaun.
You know, like going like you, if I was high flying, maybe like the flying leprechaun.
There
like,
you go.
We'll put you in a green jumpsuit, you know, flying
yeah, just
leprechaun.
Just kind of like a pot of gold, you know, throwing out gold. Is I don't know. I on the spot, probably leprechaun. But, yeah.
Iggy Smalls.
That's what Iggy Smalls.
There you go. Iggy Smalls. Yeah, we're going to come over last thing. Nice. So. But I've been to the Oriental Theater a few times. It's a really nice theater. Mm-hmm. What is it like I mean, it's a historic venue at this point. So what is it like wrestling? You mentioned that it's up on stage.
Yeah.
You know, the audience is only a part, but it's also a venue like that. Like, I don't even know, the first time you went in there or every time you go in there, what is it like wrestling there as compared to like a traditional type venue?
I really like the Oriental. Like, the Oriental's fun. And I've, like, I wrestle outside the ring a lot. I'll go into the audience and bounce around. I've pretty much treated the Oriental like my personal playground and jungle gym, you know what I mean? So I've bounced around that entire venue so much. But it's great because it is a historical venue. You know, a lot of big shows have happened there, and now they're restoring it and kind of, you know, redoing the murals and stuff like that. But it's kind of cool being in venues like that. I've wrestled in a ton of venues in this town, in Denver and all across Colorado. If there's a city or a state or a town or a street in Colorado, there's probably a chance I've wrestled there. So, but the Oriental's a special place. It's just, it's kind of our home. You know what I mean? We've kind of made it our little home. So I don't know, just wrestling in these venues is always just kind of like, this is cool. You know, this place has been here forever, and now I get to jump all over it and, like, you know, get fans and sign autographs and all this other stuff. And it's like, wow, this is pretty neat, you know, the entire time. I really like the
Oriental. Sure, it's interesting because, like, as a fan of things, and I don't care, and I'm sure you can relate as well, like, you go into a venue and you're like, there's people that have been part of this venue that have made it what it is. And now you get to say you're part of that list of what's, you know, made that venue what it is.
Hope I've contributed something, but no, you know, first time I walk into a venue, any venue, historical, theater, gym, whatever it might be, I just kind of always walk around and kind of see, just because you want to know where your audience is going to be and who's going to get the best view, like where's the best seating, stuff like that, so you know who to play to, you know what, you know what I mean? So, like, I'm always just kind of, when first time I walked in the Oriental, I just walked around the entire venue, just kind of always with my eyes on the ring, just kind of seeing where everybody's vantage point is going to be, so I know, you know, how to do things, you know, kind of set the show up for them, that kind of, you know, that kind of thing. I'm very detailed when it comes to that sort of thing. But, you know, it wasn't until I'd been wrestling there for like a year where I was just like kind of seeing the history of it, and I'm just like, oh, they perform here? Like, oh, well, that person was in the same green room as me, and you're in the green room and you see all the autographs on the walls and you're just like, oh, that's, I wasn't expecting that, you know what I mean? So it's always kind of cool. Then, you know, the Ogden Theater downtown is the same way, the Gothic, all these different places that I've been to, and you get to see all these really cool things, and it's like, wow, this is neat, you know? Like,
one of my favorite things about Denver is so many of these cities had all these theaters, and that's the thing, they had. Like, there's one or two left open, and it's like Denver used to, yeah, there's still, what, four or five of them here that are, like, those historic, I don't want to say old style, but they are that old style, smaller venues that are fun, and even concerts and stuff there, too. Like, it's just, you get an intimate feel, which I'm sure comes to, the wrestling experience as well, because it's not, I mean, as much as bands and wrestlers and everything want to do the big stadiums as well, obviously, but it's the, also those times to do those intimate shows, as they call them.
Yeah.
It's just, I think as a fan, I don't know, a kid who wants to be a wrestler, they probably feel like they're closer to the action, they're more of a part of it, stuff like that.
Yeah, the Oriental's a little bit different because, like, you know, just because the audience is all on one side of the ring, they're only on one side, whereas, like, most of the time, like most venues you go and the audience is, you know, 360, they're everywhere. So, like, theaters like that where the audience is on one side of the ring is a different kind of experience because you definitely feel like you're on stage. You know what I mean? Like, inside a ring, you always feel like you're on stage, but, when they're all around you, it's a different kind of vibe. When they're just on one side of the ring, it's like, might as well do Shakespeare. Like, this is, you know what I mean? Like, I'm on stage right now.
It's a different flip. Stop.
Yeah.
Do some Shakespeare. Yeah. All right. So you are, you mentioned before we start recording, a huge pop culture nut as well, which I mean, obviously Project Nerd, we are too. So what is it? What do you, movies, games, music, all of the above?
Comic books, movies. Yeah. Music, whatever it is. I'm not much of a gamer. I've never kind of gotten to that.
Why is that? So we had brought it up previous episodes of old school versus new school, right? Like, you know, Super Nintendo, great. You know, we talk about, you know, N64 and some other stuff. Is it just the platform right now, or is it just the games, or is it just you don't have time to really keep up with all the latest stuff?
Pretty much. Like, I used to play video games just like every, you know, everybody coming up. You know, right. It was what it was. And 64 and GoldenEye and all that other stuff was great.
Best. How many? Every episode is going to have a GoldenEye.
Yeah, it was GoldenEye, dude. Everybody
Prodigy.
Loves GoldenEye.
Not to say Prodigy.
Yeah.
Same things we say every
yeah.
episode.
It's like GoldenEye or, like, you know, Ocarina of Time. Like, all yeah. those really great N64 games and, you know, Xbox and PlayStation. Like, I have them. I just never get a chance to play them. And
yeah.
I'm always usually doing something else or, like, you know, training, wrestling, whatever. So yeah, gaming is just it's more just like I just don't have the time to do it.
So is the comics then in the sense of you could pick it up, kind of do it at your own, like mm-hmm. it's on you, right? You just read through a few pages, you read through the comic, and
yeah.
then you go back to training, or is it more time management at that point? Just you can pick up a comic, read through it more than you play
yeah.
2 hours on a video game?
Yeah, comic books are like 22 pages, so I could
right.
I could, you know, I'm an extremely fast reader, so I can knock out a comic book like that, you know,
yeah.
without even thinking about it. So it's more just like, now I've just become so acclimated to those characters. So it's just like, I kind of want to see what they're going to do with Batman this week or, you know, The Flash or whoever. So, you know, I mean, comic books have always just kind of been a big part of my life. And, you know, that's pretty much how I learned to read
right,
was through
yeah.
comic books.
Yeah.
So,
well, with that, are you big into cosplay then? Like, do you follow some of the cosplay stuff that goes on or?
No,
with comics and that piece of it. Or
I've just, done it before.
Yeah.
But I'm not like extremely into that scene. I have
okay.
a few friends who are really into that, into cosplay and stuff like that. And I think it's amazing. Like some of the costumes those people create are, like, you know what I mean? Like you go to comic cons and stuff like that, and you see them walking around, and you're just like, holy Jesus, how much did that cost? Like, what?
Right.
How did you do that? Like, you know what I mean? And I'll give a shout out to the cosplay people out there because they create costumes and stuff like that that are better than some stuff you see in Hollywood. You know what I mean? You're just
oh,
like,
for sure. Well,
yeah.
one fun is a friend of ours, Michael Wilson, Nightmage.
Mm-hmm.
He actually got sent down, I'm going to say this is 2 years ago now, sent down to New Orleans for WrestleMania and made the costume for like two or three of the entrances.
Oh, really?
Like that. Yeah, he had to keep it secret until it happened, and it was super exciting and everything like that. I think only one of them actually got worn, but he made a few and they flew him down there and all that. And he was like, yeah, it was a huge deal because exactly like his work had shown enough that somebody was like, hey, why don't we just get you to build it instead of
yeah.
someone else? But I know we're running short on time. So real quick, what are you reading that you'd recommend to our viewers? You said the comics.
DC's kind of killing it right now. Their new line is just like pretty much everything's kind of interesting and fun. Like they had my favorite stories for, you know, recently that I read was the whole Godspeed arc and for Flash, and that was just really
well. There's the
cool.
whole DC versus Marvel thing right now, and it's I think people that are very aware of both have said, like DC's destroying it on comics,
mm-hmm.
where Marvel's
doing
winning in the movies,
DC, I also think has better TV shows as well. I like their TV shows a little bit better than Marvel's, but I support all of it, so I kind of read everything and do all of it. But
we were at a convention a couple weeks ago, and one of the celebrities who was in one of the, I can't remember who it was, but he's in one of them, and they asked him, is it DC or Marvel? And he's like, I grew up reading comics. It was just comics.
Yeah.
Never had the good story is what I want to read. And that's how I'm like, you go on my shelf, it's whatever.
Yeah, no, I'm like I said, I'll support, like, yeah, and it changes, you know. Marvel may be killing it next year with better stories. You know, it kind of depends on, you know, what's going on. But no, I support all of it, man. And shout out nerd culture.
All right.
I'm down for all of it. So.
Well, where can our audience find you online? Social media, anything like that to check you out, follow your pages or anything?
I think on Twitter, I'm Twitter and Instagram, I'm Valdez Addiction.
Okay.
And I think Facebook, I'm Valdez Addiction as well. I haven't really had to promote
you don't have
that
to go
in a
search for that.
Yeah, so but no, Twitter and Instagram, I'm pretty sure I'm on there as Valdez Addiction. And if you find one, you can find the rest because they're all linked.
Okay,
so,
perfect.
Yep, that's
we'll
where
try
you...
to link them on the post too. So
oh yeah, for sure. Appreciate
perfect.
You.
Awesome. Well, thanks for joining us on
of
this
course.
Week's episode of I'm Not Famous. That's right, it's Lonnie Valdez, the Fans Addiction, Carrie, Iggy, signing out for Project Nerd. Until next week.